What's going on, everybody? This is Wednesday night, February 17, 2021, right here on YouTube. I am the Solemn Monster with you for another week of an AEW Dynamite review. You know, I learned a couple of things tonight. First of all, Fernando Tatis Jr. apparently has agreed to a 14-year, $340 million extension with the San Diego Padres, which means he'll be 36 years old at the end of that contract. And as somebody pointed out to me a little bit earlier, that is either the year or the year before the Bobby Bonilla Mets contract finally runs its course. That's a long contract. Secondly, the forbidden door must have been knocked off its hinges because I could have sworn I heard Jim Ross tonight mention that Kenny Omega is the WWE champion. You'll learn something new every night. I didn't know that Kenny Omega had, between Monday and tonight, apparently somehow wrestled the WWE title away from Drew McIntyre. I thought tonight was, on the whole, a pretty good show. I am a little exhausted, I guess you would say, from all the different tag team matches and six-man tags in this company. They have a lot of people on the roster. I guess they feel they have to, you know, somehow work them in and get them in somehow. So that's what you end up with, are a lot of tag team matches, but I think they need to dial back. I'm thinking more in terms of the six-man tags and stuff. They can get away with it up to this point because the matches have largely been very good, including the main event tonight, which was not as good as what we saw last week, but I still thought it was pretty good. So on the whole, I'd say a pretty good effort. They were really pushing hard the March 3rd episode of Dynamite, 2 weeks from tonight, and that then leads into the Revolution pay-per-view on March 7th. We have a whole bunch of updates to get into as far as that. Updates as far as the Women's Eliminator Tournament. I'll put the graphic up for you in a little bit. We'll get you all of those updates and a lot more. But again, I hope you guys are doing really well. Hangman Page opened the show tonight, tagging with Matt Hardy, taking on TH2, Jack Evans, and Helico, who can never seem really when we see them on TV. They're not on TV every week, but it's hard for them to even buy a win when we actually do see them on Dynamite. Very rare that we see them win a match on Dynamite. Tonight was no different. But then again, they're not the ones who are being featured, right? This is all about furthering the story with Matt Hardy and Hangman Page after what we saw last week, where Matt tried to sign him to a contract, just like he signed Private Party to a contract, took 30% of their earnings. Tried to pull the same stunt last week on Hangman at the bar. Hangman pulled the old switcheroo, pulled papers out of his pocket, signed a different contract. We found out here on this show tonight exactly what that contract was for. We had Adam Page hitting a big powerbomb on Angelico. Evans jumped off the top rope at Page, who caught him and powerbombed him. Hangman was going to set up for the Buckshot Lariat. Matt Hardy, though, tagged himself into the match, as he is wont to do. We've seen him do this now over the past few weeks several times, trying to steal the glory. That's what Matt Hardy is, part of his gimmick. He wants it all for himself, all the attention, the glory. But it backfired, and he got knocked into Hangman, which sent Hangman off the apron to the floor. And Evans and Angelico took it to Matt with some double-team offense. Evans went for a Phoenix Splash, and he was way off. He was way off. I would call it a botch, but honestly, I think it was just a case of Matt being distanced too far. I think he was just too far away. Whoever's fault that was, it did not look good. And we had a double Buckshot Lariat when Hangman got back in, took both heels down, double clothesline. Twist of Fate to Angelico, spikes him for the win. So Hardy and Hangman pick up the win. After the match, Matt Hardy grabs a microphone, and he's very excited. Hangman has decided to sign with him, and he's pulling in another 30%, so he's not hip to what happened last week. Apparently nobody filled him in. So now I don't feel so bad that on the first watch last week, I actually did not see Hangman switch the papers. And I realized watching the replay of what happened last week, I know exactly what happened because everybody jumped on me in the chat. Oh, you missed it. Oh, you missed it. He switched the paper, Solemn Monster. Because I was so focused on Matt when Matt was looking into the camera and he was talking to the audience and telling us whatever it was that he was telling us. At first, I didn't see Hangman switch the papers. Of course, you watch it back on the replay, and it's pretty obvious what happened. But nobody bothered to tell Matt. So Hangman said a good friend told him, always keep some papers rolled up in his pocket. You never know when you're going to need them. That was a nod to Brody Lee in the Dark Order and a lot of the skits on Being the Elite. That was kind of his gimmick. Out comes Jackson DeVille, the Jacksonville Jaguars mascot. He comes down to the ring, and he's bringing Matt a copy of the papers that Hangman actually signed last week on the show, which he learned was not, in fact, for him to represent Hangman, but it was for a match. The contract he signed was for a singles match with Hangman Page. I guess they made it official at the end of the show at Revolution. So it's going to happen at the pay-per-view. And the stipulation is that if Hangman wins, he gets 100% of Matt Hardy's earnings for the first quarter of 2021. Hardy says, fine, you got one over on me, but you're a man of integrity. You will put something on the line as well. I shouldn't be the only one putting something on the line. So how about if I win, if I beat you at Revolution, then I get 100% of your earnings for the first quarter of 2021. And I hate shit like this because, you know, it's just meaningless words, right? I mean, you talk about anything involving money. If you beat me, I'll give you $100,000. Like, we've seen stipulations like that from time to time. So I don't really give a shit about the stipulations here. This guy gets this money. This guy gets... I don't give a shit. Who cares? So I actually think the stipulation is kind of lame. I guess it fits Matt's gimmick, since he's Money Matt. All about the money. But I don't really care much for the stipulation. Hangman says, though, I guess we've got a money match. I guess so. But then the mascot attacks Hangman from behind, and then the mascot pulls his giant head off, scarring many children watching now for life. You're not supposed to take the mascot's head off. Kids aren't supposed to see that. There's a whole big controversy in New York many years ago when there was a baseball mascot who was photographed in the New York Daily News. I think it was somebody was doing an article about the guy in the costume, and they had a picture run in the paper of him headless. Well, I mean, headless without the mascot. Obviously, it's not totally headless, because that would be a little much for the New York Daily News. But it was this big controversy. The team was very upset with this guy because you're not supposed to show people what you look like with the head off. It is a violation of mascot etiquette. But it was Isaiah Cassidy in the costume, and he started beating down Hangman Page. Matt Hardy then says to TH2 outside the ring, look, I'll give you guys $3,700. I don't know where he pulled that number out from, but he said, I'll give you guys $3,700 if you kick this guy's ass. And now it's a 3-on-1 attack. They get in the ring. They're beating down on Hangman Page. And here comes the Dark Order running out to make the save. -1 was back. And he stood on stage and directed traffic as all the other members of the Dark Order came out to save Hangman. So I like that they're at least continuing this stuff with Hangman of the Dark Order. I do think in the end he'll join, even if just as a ceremonial member. It's like a nice little story that's kind of playing itself out in the background. So I like that. But, you know, we're going to get a match out of it. And that is now official for the pay-per-view on the 7th. Tony Schiavone narrated a recap of all the action from the Japanese side of the bracket in the Women's Eliminator Tournament. This aired on Monday night on YouTube. I told you guys all about this last week. If you listen to the podcast on Sunday, I let all of you guys know. Monday, 7 Eastern, for the people who wanted to watch it, they were going to be airing this separately. It's like what they did when they had that women's tag team tournament many months ago. These matches were taped on a closed set in Japan. I don't know exactly when. I don't know if it was weeks ago. I don't know if it was last week. I did watch it. I thought there were some solid matches. Nothing really outstanding. We had Yuka Sakazaki defeating Mei Tsuruga. Emi Sakura defeating Venny. Rio Mizunami, don't beat me up now, defeating Maki Ito. This really upset people this week. People were very upset that Maki Ito was eliminated. I'm not so sure that Maki Ito, when this was taped, because Maki Ito has built up quite a bit of social media support. And I'm not really sure that started happening. Maybe the match was taped before then, but yeah, I don't think it's a big deal. I mean, Maki Ito, clearly this Maki Ito lady is going to be coming over here when she's able to, and she'll be a star. I don't know how big of a star, but she'll be a star. This is not the last we've seen of Maki Ito. I mean, people need to just cool their jets. But yes, Maki Ito fell to Rio Mizunami, who I will say, I don't think I've seen her or seen much of her before. Of everybody that I did see when I watched the tournament matches on Monday, Mizunami might have been the one who impressed me the most. And I was surprised that they did not put Maki Ito over. That did catch me off guard, I will say. I was not expecting that. But Mizunami, from what I saw, actually was fairly impressive. She's moving on to the tournament. Aja Kong beat Rin Karukura. So anyway, those are my thoughts on the tournament matches from Monday night. They are going to be having more tournament matches coming up this Monday, so I'll be watching that again, and I'll have more thoughts on that next week. Let's go through the match that took place tonight. Then I'll put the graphic up on the screen so you guys can see where things stand as far as the brackets go. So why don't we do that first? And we had Riho. Now, we have not seen Riho on the show in a very long time. In fact, this was Riho's first match on Dynamite in 11 months. So almost a full year because of the pandemic. Riho has been MIA. And so she was back tonight taking on the NWA Women's Champion, Serena Deeb. Riho and Serena Deeb had an excellent match. I got to give my kudos to both these ladies. They went out there and they had what I thought was... I'm trying to think, because it's been a while since we've seen Riho in an AEW match. This may have been the best Riho match of her AEW run. It is possible that she was part maybe of a multi-woman match, well over a year ago that I'm just not remembering. But if it wasn't her best AEW match, it's certainly up there among the very best matches that she has had in this company. Riho escaped a brainbuster, took down Deeb with a dropkick before landing a diving crossbody. Serena Deeb rolled through, targeted Riho's left leg. So there was some psychology in this match as well. She was working over Riho's leg. Riho tried to evade and get away, but Serena hit a dragon screw. Riho with a crossbody for a near fall. Serena rolled out of the ring. Riho brought her back into the ring. And then Deeb caught her while she was trying to come back in with another dragon screw. Serena hit a powerbomb, locked on a stretch muffler. Riho turned it into an inside cradle for a two. Northern Light suplex from Riho gets a near fall. And then Riho, man, I know Riho is not she's not a big person. Riho is what, 98 pounds, I think is what they bill her at. 98 pounds. So Riho is a tiny person. But she came off that top rope and she stuffed that foot stomp and just buried her boots right in the gut. And Serena sold it like she couldn't breathe. Her insides had just been stomped on. She sold it great. She then avoided the running knee strike, and there were a series of cradles back and forth, and Riho locked on a ghetto clutch for the win. Really, really good stuff. So if you are, I know some people are on the fence about some of the women's matches in AEW, but these two went out there, and they had easily the best match of the tournament so far, in my opinion. Although, let me bring this up. We'll get the brackets here on the screen. Let me take a look back at some of the matches we had at the beginning. Make sure I'm not forgetting any of the key matches here. Well, yeah, Thunder Rosa and Layla Hirsch had a good match too, but I like this one more. But that's how the brackets are looking as of right now. Thunder Rosa and Riho are in the next round. So that's coming up next week. There you see on the Japanese side of the bracket, Yuka Sakazaki one-on-one with Emi Sakura. That could go either way. Both those women were active in AEW before the pandemic and are probably going to be sticking around. So I don't know. That match could go either way. I did say when I made my predictions that we were going to get a Britt Baker Yuka Sakazaki final. So I'm going to stick with that as my prediction. Rio Mizunami takes on Aja Kong. And so that is the way that things are looking right now. As far as the women's bracket is concerned. By the way, if I didn't mention it before, hit that like button on this video, because it does help out in the recommended column on the right-hand side. I sure do appreciate those likes. I just don't mention it enough. But our trusty mods are always there to back me up whenever I forget. We had a training video. Oh, boy. Now, talk about this. We had a training video in the gym with Shaquille O'Neal and Jade Cargill. Of course, they are going to be taking on Cody and Red Velvet in a couple of weeks on Dynamite. And so we got a training video. And now I'm getting kind of interested now. I'm like, all right, here we go. Right? Because they were previewing it before the break. And I thought, we have not seen any in-ring footage. We have not seen match footage. We have not seen training footage of Jade Cargill. I don't know what this woman is capable of. I don't know what her level of experience at this point even is. I thought we were going to get to see a little bit of that. But instead, what we ended up with here was Shaq and Jade Cargill on the court shooting baskets. That's what this entire video was. They were shooting baskets on the basketball court. Shaq also hit a free throw. So you know this video was doctored in some way. That he sunk the free throw. Okay, that was like, that might have been the most shocking part of this entire show. Now, if they were having a basketball game with Cody and Red Velvet on March 3rd, I would say, hey, Cody and Red Velvet have their work cut out for them. I mean, Shaq is 9 feet tall anyway. But these two are taking it seriously. They're hitting the hardwood. They're getting ready. So yeah, man. If this were a basketball game, man, this would be quite the video training package here. But the last I checked, and correct me if I'm wrong. Last I checked, they were having a wrestling match, and so I ask you, since we're having a fucking wrestling match, what exactly is the point of showing these two playing basketball in preparation for a wrestling match? I'm trying to figure that one out. Doesn't really make a lot of sense, does it? Not even just Jade Cargill. At least Shaq has been in the ring before, but Shaq doesn't have any experience. He's not a trained wrestler. Shouldn't you be showing them doing wrestling-related moves, hitting the ropes, running the ropes, taking bumps? Maybe Jade goes up to the top rope to try some high-flying move and Shaq is going to catch her or something. No, just playing basketball. Why didn't they show them on, sitting at the table playing cards, playing gin rummy, playing mahjong, Connect Four, Hungry Hungry Hippo? I sunk your battleship. You may as well just play anything you want. Play Game Boy. You know what? A basketball game would probably be better than the match is going to end up being. Maybe they should have done that. Cody and Red Velvet, I mean, that would be a bit of a handicap. Red Velvet's about 3.5 feet tall. Cody, compared to Shaq, may as well be 3.5 feet tall. It wouldn't really be a fair fight. But that's still the number one question that I have. Jade Cargill. Look, she looks phenomenal. She's in fantastic shape. When they've showed these training vignettes of her in the gym and everything, great, we get it. You know, we get it. She can lift weights. She's well-built like a bodybuilder. But what can she do in the ring? Now, if they're hiding her because when she gets in the ring, she's going to shock the world by going in there and looking like a capable, competent wrestler, and they want to surprise everybody, then all right, well, that's one thing. But yeah, the expectations are rising because it's making me wonder, why are they hiding her away? This is a really high-profile match for a first-time match for somebody. It's a lot of pressure. Makes me wonder if they're hiding something from us. Orange Cassidy. He beat Dr. Luther. The only appropriate role for Luther is what we saw here on this show. If he's going to be on Dynamite, it's got to be quick. One and done. Get in there, put over whoever the other person is, and get out. That's the only role I want to see Luther in on this show. Save him for Dark. Otherwise, I don't know why he's on Dynamite. Think of all the people who they don't have time to feature on this show. And then I look at some of the people they do feature, and it makes me scratch my head. Because we still don't know when that second show is going to be debuting on TNT. So there's a lot of talent who are not being featured. You know, who could probably use that TV time more than someone like Dr. Luther. I'm not really sure what's accomplished by, putting him out there like they did tonight for an Orange Cassidy squash. I thought that was, it didn't last very long, so it was relatively inoffensive. But to me, it just seems like they're wasting valuable television time that could be going to somebody else. Vitamin Vision says, why so much Luther? It's not Luther hate. It's just called the truth. I just don't know why it seems like he's been featured more and more on the show lately. I know he's got the tag team Chaos Project or whatever it is. Not a knock on him personally, but I really don't have any use for him on Dynamite. That's my opinion. You don't like my opinion, that's fine. You can have a different opinion than the one that I have. That's what's beautiful about opinions. We all have them. If you don't like it, I don't know what to tell you. Go play some basketball with Shaq and Jade Cargill. Let's talk about Sting confronting Team Taz. And then I promise we're going to get to some of your super chats because I want to make sure we don't save them all for the end, but I will read everything you guys send me. Ryan says Luther is a deadlockite. So what does that mean? He's a deadlockite? Yeah, Luther has a Jericho. That's the only reason Luther's on TV. We all know. I mean, it's not like Jericho has hidden that. He's been friendly with Luther for all these years. He worked with him early in his career. He's there because he's Jericho's buddy. The way that Ed Leslie had a job all those years in WCW because he was buddy-buddy with Hulk Hogan, that's why Luther has a job in AEW. And that's fine. You know, Jericho wanted to do a favor for a friend. Great. But let's not kid ourselves. Luther would not be on the show were it not for his friendship with Chris Jericho. Taz, Brian Cage, and Taz's son Hook. They come to the ring. No Ricky Starks, no Will Hobbs, due to what Taz said were weather issues. Taz says that he's seeing all over social media that Sting is going to come out, and he's going to call out Team Taz. He goes, well, Sting, now would be a good time for you to show your face. You were going to show up. And the lights go out, and here comes the snow. The snow is falling. You know, there's too much fucking snow right now in this country. We're getting another 6 inches here in New York tomorrow. Now, look. All the stuff I'm hearing about what people are going through in Texas is awful. And I'm grateful that, you know, we don't have to go through that right now. Hopefully we won't. Obviously, there's a lot of people still in Texas without power. It's very cold in Texas. So, you know, I don't want to make it sound like this is as bad as what those people are going through. But just this snow has been ridiculous. You know, we finally have gotten out of that last snowstorm and everything was starting to melt. And, you know, I'm supposed to get on the road on Friday morning for work, and I don't know what's going to be. Being on the road is the last place I'm going to want to be. So I'm going to be watching this snowfall tomorrow and seeing how much we get. Especially because I have one tire. The driver's side tire is completely fucked on my car. There's a slow leak in that tire, and the mechanic couldn't find it, didn't change it. So I have to keep putting air in the tire every few days, and it just went flat again earlier today. So anyway, those are my problems. You don't give a shit about my problems, right? But hey, thanks to Professor John Gotti, who hopefully is still here, I might be able to get a new tire and hopefully not drive off the road to my doom. So we'll have to work on that. Sting comes out. He's out there with his baseball bat. There was no Darby Allin, or as Taz says, Dobby. There was no Dobby on the show tonight. So Sting comes out and Taz says, you know, you coming into this ring is the worst thing you could have done. Said that you need that baseball bat. Because without it, without that baseball bat, you can't stand on your own. And Taz you know, he's smart guy. He knows what he's doing. Sting took the bait. He fell for it. He dumped the bat. And he got physical. He attacked the heels for the first time since we've seen Sting on TV. And my big critique about their usage of Sting so far has been that he's on TV way too much, to the point where he just doesn't feel as special as he should, because you save him for when you have something for him to do. Well, tonight, they gave him something to do. He didn't just come out and stare at the Tron and walk to the back. He went after the heels. Sting dumped the baseball bat, and he went after Team Taz. Hook, I think it was Hook, came up from behind Sting, tried to choke him with the baseball bat, and as Sting tried to wrestle that away from him, Cage kicked Sting in the gut, set him up. Now, I thought Darby was coming out. Okay, this is the part where I thought Darby was going to be coming out to make the save. Oh, no. There was no save for Sting on this show. This was a test. This was the first big test physically for Sting in almost 6 years. And of all people to give him a powerbomb, they chose Brian Cage, who is a big man who is not exactly light to the touch. He looks like he lays his shit in. And Brian Cage gave Sting a powerbomb, but this was a brutal powerbomb. He did not hold back on this powerbomb. This was not a powerbomb like, you know, Sid, Psycho Sid. When he used to do a powerbomb, he would get you up in the air horizontal, and he would drop you straight down. Now, I always liked Sid's powerbombs. I'm still a big fan of the big guy, the big tall guy using the powerbomb as a finish. So whether it's Sid, whether it's Diesel, Kevin Nash, say what you want to about Kevin Nash, especially when he would powerbomb a smaller guy. It always looked great. Got some great height on it. But this was just a straight down, full momentum. He smashed Sting into the canvas. Sting immediately held the back of his head. I assume, selling. But knowing his history and knowing the fact that, you know, this is the first real bump, I got to tell you, I was shocked to see Sting take this kind of bump on the show. I was not expecting that. It's one thing to go over to Sting and to punch him or give him a kick in the gut, you know, work him over in the corner. I was not expecting him to take a powerbomb from Brian Cage either now or on the pay-per-view. We haven't even gotten to the street fight yet. That's in 2 weeks. So this was actually a little 2.5 weeks. So that was the thing that shocked me the most on the show tonight. First bump that Sting has taken in well over 5 years since that Night of Champions match against Seth Rollins. And we know the man has spinal stenosis. We know the man has said that when he negotiated with Tony Khan to come to AEW, it was with the idea of doing cinematic matches. That was not podcasters or dirt sheets speculating that maybe Sting is going to do something cinematic. Sting went on the AEW podcast. He went on the company's official podcast, and he flat out said the plan was for him to do cinematic style matches. After tonight, I'm not so sure about that. It's still possible that the Street Fighter Revolution could be shot cinematically. It could be pre-taped. But if Sting is out there on television taking bumps, then they may as well just have a traditional street fight live in the building. So I was genuinely surprised. And I'm glad if he really is doing that well, then great. But, you know, again, the guy is over 60 years old with a spinal condition. So, yeah, it's a little unnerving when you see him get dropped on the back of his head and neck. But I will say, at least he finally did something. He finally did more than just come out and stare and go to the back. So it's about time. Then we got to my favorite part of the show. The Sterngeist in the chat. You like that, huh? Darby, I know a lot of people here in New York who talk exactly like Taz, so I always just get a kick out of it. I know people who have the exact same accent. Darby. You would think he lives in Boston. Doesn't that sound very Bostonian? Jim Ross was pitching it to a Kenny Omega segment recorded earlier today. And as he pitched it to the segment, he said, let's go take a look, or something to the effect of, let's go take a look at what the WWE champion is up to. Or we have footage of the WWE champion. And I thought I was losing my mind at first. I'm like, did I just hear that right? And sure enough, I did. Little did I know that Kenny Omega is the WWE champion, according to Jim Ross. And, you know, I knew that Kenny Omega was the belt collector, but I didn't know he collected all of the belts. Apparently, this man has all the gold. That forbidden door. I mean, you thought the forbidden door with New Japan was something. That just knocks the whole fucking thing right off the damn hinges. If they can pull that off. Yeah, you had Cody doing interviews this week saying we would totally be open to doing business with WWE if they were open to it. Sure. Yeah, we'd love to work with WWE. I'm sure they would. Jim Ross apparently already thinks they are. So they cut to a segment with Omega at a preschool. And he was doing a book reading of the Young Bucks' new book, Killing the Business. He was sitting there. He was showing them the cover, the pictures on the cover. And there's a class of preschool kids. So he was reading a passage from the book talking about how he was the main reason New Japan's business went up. Don Callis interrupted, said, look, we're running short on time. We got to get out of here. And they led the kids in a little chant of Kenny. Kids wanted to play with him. Don Callis, though, instead said, no, Kenny can't play, but you know who can? Michael Nakazawa. Michael Nakazawa will play with the children in a totally normal way. So the kids said they hated Nakazawa. They beat him up. This was just done for comedy. But I suspect that all anybody is really going to be talking about is Jim Ross calling Kenny Omega the WWE champion. I understand that there are slip-ups and stuff. God knows Jim Ross has slipped up quite a few times on this show, but that is a first, I must say. That is a first. As soon as I heard that, I said to my boy Steve, and shout out to Steve Mello, he is the man. I said, brother, we need some new art for the stream tonight. It was out with all the old ones and in with the new ones. And now we have Kenny Omega as the WWE champion. I love it. We had the Young Bucks defending the AEW tag team titles against Santana and Ortiz, proud and powerful. Before the match, the Bucks went over to their parents, who were live at the building tonight, Mama Buck and Papa Buck. Is Pat Buck related to them? Maybe he is. Maybe he's their second cousin removed. Now, Pat Buck was not in the front row. I don't think that Vince McMahon would like that very much, considering he's under contract to WWE. It was Mama Buck and Papa Buck at ringside. And in the back, we had Kenny Omega, Don Callis, and the Good Brothers watching all of the action on a monitor. So MJF climbed up onto the apron early in the match. He was teasing, punching Nick Jackson. The referee caught him, and he ended up ejecting all the members of the Inner Circle. So MJF, Hager, they all had to leave. Sammy Guevara not on the show. A lot of controversy this week involving Sammy Guevara and stuff with Impact, and we'll talk about that on Sunday on the podcast. I'm sure more information will come out on that. Not a big deal. It's not going to affect the relationship between the two companies, but it is interesting, though. It is very funny. We're only weeks into this working agreement between these companies, and already we're getting stories of rejected creative pitches and controversy and people being sent home. And I suppose it was inevitable, right? You knew at some point there was going to be some kind of issue that would come up. I mean, this is the sort of thing that happens when companies work together. And I can kind of understand a company like WWE not wanting to do that for that very reason. They don't want the headaches. The question is, how do they work through it? And if they can work through it easy enough, then the two companies will get along just fine. But if we start to hear stories of this pitch being rejected and this person is unhappy with the creative that was handed to them and stuff like that, that's where it's going to become problematic. But right now, I don't think it's anything for the two companies to really be worrying about. So late in the match, the Bucks delivered a double super kick to Santana. Matt went for the pin. Ortiz broke it up. Bucks went for the BTE trigger. Santana moved, which caused the Bucks to collide knees first with one another. Santana and Ortiz hit the street sweeper on Nick Jackson. Matt dove onto the referee to break up the pin. As far as near falls are concerned, this was the nearest of near falls. It was a great near fall. There was no time to spare. Matt Jackson broke that pin up. I mean, they were a hair away from a three count. So he got in there just in the nick of time. Santana and Ortiz dumped Matt over the barricade. I think they basically powerbombed him into the crowd, kind of in the section near where his parents were. Would have been cool if they powerbombed him into his parents. How fucking great would that have been? That's some heel shit. But they didn't do it. So now they've got Nick Jackson isolated all by himself. And Ortiz, though, is talking about, you know, we're the best. And you know, even on commentary, I think Tony Schiavone said, well, you know, you better follow up. And Ortiz paid the price for it. When he got back into the ring, he got cradled and rolled up by Nick Jackson. After the match, the Inner Circle immediately hit the ring. Jericho, MJF, Hager, they all hit the ring. They attacked the Bucks. Omega, Callis, Gallows, Anderson, they're in the back. Kenny Omega is saying, we should do something. We should go out there. And Callis is saying, no, the good brothers will go. So Anderson and Gallows leave, presumably to come to the ring to make the save. They don't seem to be in any great rush, though. It takes them, probably was a good 20 or 30 seconds before they finally showed up. And in the ring, Jericho and MJF put the Bucks in their submission holds. We had Jericho locking on the Lion Tamer, Salt of the Earth by MJF. The Bucks were tapping out, and the announcers pointed that out because this is going to be the match of Revolution for the championships. And here on this show, the Bucks were submitting. Brandon Cutler runs out. I forgot he was even employed. Brandon Cutler runs out to help the Bucks. Hager flattened him on the ramp. Gallows and Anderson seem to, like I said, take their time getting down to the ring, but they finally came out, and the Inner Circle bailed out of the ring. Jericho and MJF then, more so Jericho, they go over to where the Bucks' parents were, and he goes up into Papa Buck's face. And I thought he was going to smack the shit out of him. Instead, Papa Buck shoves Chris Jericho. Now, how does Jericho respond to Geriatric Buck pushing him? This man is not a wrestler. He has no business putting his hands on the talent. So if you're Chris Jericho, as soon as, you know, Papa Buck puts his hands on you, it's open season, right? Whether it's Jericho or MJF, they're gonna grab him, they're gonna shove him back, they're gonna punch him. No. They yell mean things at him and they back away. They let the old man put his hands on Chris Jericho, and Jericho didn't do a goddamn thing about it. He backed off. That was lame. That is not what a heel should be doing in that situation. I mean, for God's sakes, even Mr. Cena got kicked in the head once by Edge many years ago on TV. Because he had it coming. I think Edge actually smacked him in his face. I think Edge went to his house and even smacked John Cena's father in the face on another occasion. See, that's a heel. Edge was a heel. But it was so lame looking at the heels backing down from Geriatric Buck here on the show. But I was glad to see Santana and Ortiz featured. You've heard me talk about the fact that they've really been almost hidden away in the background. I know they've been part of this ongoing drama in the Inner Circle, but they're so much better than that, and they really should be featured more. They are one of the best teams they have in that entire company. So they kind of just out of nowhere put them into this tag team title match on TV. And I at least thought there was a chance that they might have Anderson and Gallows cost the Bucks the belts. I thought there was a chance they might actually cost them the belts, which would then give us a sort of Inner Circle warfare at Revolution. You would have Santana and Ortiz defending against Jericho and MJF. So I thought there was at least a chance we might get that, and that's not what they did. That's called the cowardly heel. Well, look, I know Jericho has shown sometimes to be cowardly, but we've also seen Jericho do some heinous shit. And I'm of the opinion that if you are promoting a pay-per-view match, which they are in a couple of weeks between these two teams, what better way to get heat on the heels than by having the heels physically assault one of the Bucks' parents? Now, they're not going to assault the mother. So why not let Papa Buck take a beating? Why not have him take a bump? Of all the people to trust, you know, in doing something like that, Jericho would be the one. He'd be one of the few. I wouldn't have Brian Cage go and powerbomb Papa Buck in the middle of the ring because he wouldn't be getting up after that. So, yeah, I get the whole chicken shit cowardly heel thing, but in this case, I think it was warranted to put some heat on this match going into Revolution. They had other ideas. Maybe Papa Buck will be in the audience again at the pay-per-view, and maybe they'll do something at the pay-per-view. You know, maybe at the pay-per-view during the match, they'll do something with their father. FTR was back from their suspension for their attack on the Dinosaur, taking on the team of Matt and Mike Seidel. I didn't even know there was a Mike Seidel. Until this match was announced earlier in the week, I didn't even know this guy existed. Cody sat in on commentary for the match. Before the match, they did a gender reveal. Brandy was on screen, and she said, in light of the fact that we can't really have people together, and we can't have a big party, she figured, what better way to reveal the gender of our baby than announcing it live here on Dynamite? She said Cody didn't even know, because Cody's got a big mouth. So they come out. Cody gets his full entrance, because he's Cody. And he and Brandy come out on stage, and we look up at the screen, and it says, it's a girl! Congratulations. So Cody and Brandy are going to have a girl. Congrats to them. They also announced that they are calling... Well, Cody, I guess, sort of announced it, but not really. Excalibur did. Cody was doing commentary because he's going to be part of a special match at Revolution. So right from Dynamite on the 3rd, him in Red Velvet against Shaq and Jade Cargill, that's Sunday at Revolution. Cody is going to be part of what they're calling a Face of the Revolution ladder match. It's going to take place March 7th on pay-per-view. 6 entrants, half of which we now know. We know half the field. Cody is one. Scorpio Sky is 2, and Penta El Cero Miedo, he is in the ladder match as well. That's great news, because that means that Penta's visa issue has been resolved. That's the reason why we haven't seen him. They did a whole injury angle with him, because there were some kind of visa problem that had to be resolved. And, you know, these visa issues, I mean, it could take months to resolve. Thankfully, they got that taken care of, and so he's going to be back. So that's what they're calling it. Face of the Revolution ladder match. At least they're doing something different than the Battle Royal. We see so many Battle Royals usually on these AEW pay-per-views. So it's nice that they're at least trying something a little bit different. So I think that's good. But anyway, we had Mike and Matt here against FTR. Mike performed a moonsault from the top rope onto both FTR members outside the ring. In the ring, Matt Seidel covered Dax Harwood for a near fall. Matt avoided a slingshot suplex attempt, rolled up Harwood for another 2 count, and when Harwood kicked out, Matt was sort of kicked into the top rope, or into the rope, and he was punched from the floor by Cash Wheeler. Wheeler hit a Northern Lights suplex on Matt. Mike broke up the pin. Mike made a blind tag into the match. Matt Seidel, boy, this is confusing. Matt and Mike, Mike and Matt. Matt Seidel performed a double knees onto both members of FTR. Mike tried to move off the top rope. Unfortunately, it did not connect. He tried something. It did not work. It missed. Covered Wheeler, put his foot on the ropes. Matt went up top. Harwood tripped him. Wheeler made a blind tag. FTR hit the big rig on Mike Seidel, and Harwood pinned him for the win. Now, after the match, FTR grabbed a bag from Doc Samson. Doctor tried to get into the ring. I think he was coming in to check on Mike, I guess it would have been. They grab the doctor's bag, and they dig in there, and they pull out a pair of scissors. And they're going to do to him and his hair what they did to the horns on the dinosaur's mask all those weeks ago. Lights go out, and all of a sudden we see a video. We see a video of the Luchasaurus mask. Lights come back on. Luchasaurus, Jungle Boy, and Marco Stunt are in the ring. And Luchasaurus has a new mask. So it was silly when they did it in the first place. This big angle where FTR, they cut the horns off this guy's fucking mask. And it's like, was it literally handed down to him by the dinosaurs from the crustacean period or whatever the hell period? I don't have all my dinosaur periods in front of me. I wonder if the female dinosaurs had periods. There's a lot of questions when it comes to these dinosaurs. To brush up on my Jurassic Park knowledge. But they made it seem like it was such an unbelievably horrible thing that he did. And I was thinking the same thing at the time. He'll just buy a fucking mask. Who cares? Was it handed down to him by his dino dad? Let's just have another fucking mask made. And that's what he did. So he got his horns back. So they attacked FTR. There was no Tully Blanchard, by the way. He was not there tonight. I don't know why. But anyway, he was not there. I'm going to talk about Tully in a second, though. We had Jon Moxley in the main event, teaming up with Lance Archer and Rey Fénix against Eddie Kingston. I love how all these main events that Eddie Kingston has had on TV so far this year. It's very, it is very cool. Even though he's already, he's been there for a while already. But to see Eddie Kingston get, he's gotten, we've seen him in a pay-per-view main event. He's been in a bunch of TV main events. I'm loving all the attention that Eddie Kingston is getting. But it was him and the Butcher and the Blade, six-man tag team main event. So they go to a break a few minutes in. Back from picture in picture, Lance Archer makes a hot tag to Rey Fénix, and Rey Fénix does what Rey Fénix does best. Rey Fénix went wild like a madman. This guy, imagine trying to sit here in the waning minutes of this show and even try to take notes on what this guy is doing. I take my eyes off this guy for 1 second, and all of a sudden he's somewhere else. I don't even know where he went. He's flying all over the place like a ping pong ball. So he did this ridiculous dive out over the top rope onto the Blade outside. Comes back in, hits a cutter to the Butcher. Gets some huge hang time on a frog splash to Butcher for a near fall. Moxley is on the apron. He wants the hot tag. And he gets it from Fénix. Kingston gets the tag on the opposite side. They're locked in on one another. They meet in the middle. They start brawling. Kingston tried for the spinning back fist. It misses. Rey Fénix hits him with a super kick. Archer takes him down with a pounce. Moxley locks Kingston in his choke submission, but the Blade breaks it up. Archer choke slams Fénix. Now, this was not him turning on Fénix, but Butcher and Blade are outside. They're standing on the outside of the ring. Archer and Fénix are on the apron, and Archer choke slams Fénix, who does a corkscrew flip in midair and lands on the heels. Archer then hits a cannonball off the apron. He wipes them all out, including his own partner. So now they're all down, and the only men left in the ring are Moxley and Eddie Kingston. They're the final two. And Moxley plants Kingston with the paradigm shift for the win. Anderson and Gallows immediately hit the ring as Moxley is posing on the turnbuckles. They attack him from behind, and they hook his arms back as they wait for the WWE champion, Kenny Omega, to make his way out. He's got a microphone in his hand. He says, yes, there is going to be a rematch, because Moxley has talked about, getting Omega back in the ring. And he says, yes, there will be a rematch, but it's going to be a little bit different. It's going to be a special stipulation for this rematch. And the rematch between them at Revolution is going to be an exploding barbed wire death match. Onita, wherever Onita is right now, he's got a little thrill going up his leg. If he's watching any of AEW Dynamite, probably not. an exploding barbed wire death match. Don't tell Jim Cornette. He's probably passed out for a different reason. Me, where do I stand on this? I am not a huge fan of deathmatch wrestling. It's just not my thing. It really just depends, I guess, on the match for me, because I've seen plenty of hardcore matches with thumbtacks and shit. If done right, there have been a ton of great matches. One of my all-time favorite matches, in fact, involved thumbtacks and weapons and shit at Madison Square Garden, Triple H and Cactus Jack, Royal Rumble 2000. But like the really extreme deathmatch stuff with light tubes and, you know, barbed wire ropes and stuff like that, it's never really my thing. So I wasn't really a big fan of the lights out match that these two had at Full Gear a couple of years ago. It just wasn't my thing. So I'm not overly enthusiastic about the stipulation, but it might win me over. You know, I'm going to watch it and we're going to see. I'm sure it's going to be violence like we have not yet seen in an AEW match. Probably lots of blood. So it may end up being a lot of fun. But if I just remember what I felt like coming out of the lights out match, and I think I disagreed with a lot of people on that match. So I don't know if I might have the same feeling coming out of this one, but it sounds like it's going to be a wild main event. Moxley tried to fight back and break free. Omega hit two V-triggers to put him down, and that is what ended the show. Tony Schiavone, I'll tell you one person who can't wait. Tony Schiavone. He sounded genuinely excited for this exploding barbed wire death match. I can't wait, said Tony Schiavone. So I know he's looking forward to it. Next Wednesday, it's going to be Hangman Page against Isaiah Cassidy. We're going to get two semifinal matches in the Women's Eliminator Tournament coming out of whatever happens on Monday on the Japanese side of the bracket. And I think they're having two American matches as well. That's Monday night. Again, more matches on Wednesday on Dynamite. Ricky Starks and Brian Cage against the Varsity Blondes. Jake Hager against Brandon Cutler. I don't think it would be humanly possible for me to care any less about Jake Hager against Brandon Cutler. Maybe Orange Cassidy against Luther. But I do not care about Jake Hager against Brandon Cutler. Then on March 3rd, it's going to be Cody and Red Velvet in a basketball challenge against Shaq, or it should be a basketball challenge, against Shaq and Jade Cargill. And Jurassic Express takes on FTR and Tully Blanchard, six-man tag. So I guess Tully is going to try to neutralize Marco Stunt. And my fear is that we're going to see Tully Blanchard. Now, Tully Blanchard is 67 years old. Tully Blanchard, for a 67-year-old pro wrestler, considering how crippled up most of these guys are in their 50s, let alone their 60s, when you see him moving around and he was doing a assisted spike pile driver with FTR coming off the middle rope a few weeks ago, landing on his knees, I cringed. So Tully Blanchard, for 67, for a guy who's been in the business as long as he has, is moving around pretty good. But my fear is that we're going to have to see Tully Blanchard take bumps for Marco's stunt. That doesn't sit well with me. I don't want to see one half of the Brainbusters taking bumps for Marco's stunt. It's not right. Just doesn't feel right. Says, my fear is that Tully is going to take bumps, and meanwhile Sting is going to take bumps for Team Taz. Well, we already saw Sting take a bump for Team Taz, so if he could survive that, then I guess he could survive anything. Take a look at your super chats here. I'm going to scroll on back and see what you guys thought of the show tonight. And again, if you have questions, if you have comments, or if you just want to support the stream, I have gotten some unbelievable super chat drops that I want to acknowledge again as we go along here. We're not even done yet, and this has already been the best super chat-wise, the best Dynamite stream in quite a while, which I was not expecting. Lord Frieza, thank you for the 10. Says he finally got power after 40 hours of no power or water. Had water damage in his home. and he's pretty sure he's going to lose power again. So, yeah, I was saying before about all the folks in Texas, I hope everybody is doing better than they were, and hopefully everybody has either gotten their power back or very, very soon. I know what it's like to be without power for days on end. We had a big power issue in New York 2 years ago. I think it might have been 2 summers ago, pre-pandemic. I think we were without power for about 3 or 4 days, but that was in the middle. So this is in the middle of the winter. When it happened to us, it was in the middle of the biggest heat wave of the year, in the middle of the summer. So take your pick as far as what's worse, because that was pretty fucking brutal. So I know that feeling. It sucks. And hopefully everybody down there is doing a little bit better. Naif Al-Safar, thank you for the $10, my friend. Ryan Spies, we're technically going to see a live Tully Blanchard match in 2021. That is just wild. You know what it reminds me of? One of the things that, one of the great thrills really for me, and it just reminds me of how much I miss calling matches with JD for House of Glory. One of the matches that we were able to call was a Rock and Roll Express main event with Ricky and Robert. And I just remember sitting there going, I'm calling a Rock and Roll Express main event here in 2019. What a fucking wild year. So, yeah, I mean, it is crazy. Some of these guys, when you see them back in the ring. But for me, just the fact that I was able to call their match is not something I ever expected to be doing. And not for nothing, but, you know, Ricky Morton, the guy can move. Ricky Morton's actually a little bit younger than Tully Blanchard is, but Ricky Morton is doing Canadian Destroyers because he's out of his fucking mind. Ken terminated by DQ. What's going on, Ken? I like Lacey Ryan, but what is up with WWE? Lacey Ryan? Well, I don't know who Lacey Ryan is, but what is up with WWE giving bland names to Lacey and Eli Drake? At least it's not 95 with the Ringmaster or Thurman Sparky Plug. Well, remember, some of these names are probably suggested by the wrestlers themselves in some cases. So it could be the company on some occasions, on other occasions, and maybe the talent themselves. So they deserve some of the blame, too, for some of these crappy names. EJ, pitchers and catchers reported today. How excited are you about Lindor this season? I am always nervous going into the season. There's reason, I think, to be a little more optimistic. But look, you know, when it comes to the Mets, when it comes to my team, there's always a dark cloud that's just hanging over your head, and you're always just this feeling of whether it's an injury or a scandal, or, and we've already had a few scandals. The season hasn't even started yet, but I'm cautiously optimistic. Cautiously optimistic. The Cheeseburger, WWE Champion Kenny Omega doing story time with little kids. Food Hive, thank you for the $5. Jacob Donnelly with the $5 super chat. An exploding barbed wire death match. Someone hide Renee Young. Yeah, you know, I wish there would have been a camera on Renee Young when that announcement was made, because I'm sure she is not very happy about that at all. Ryan Spies, if AEW are going to go full FMW, now they should at least add Luther to the death match. Well, you may have just found the perfect role for old Luther. Right? That's right up his alley. Luther made a whole career out of matches like that, didn't he? Rodimus Prime with the 50 from earlier. Enjoyed the intro to the show on Sunday, especially with Nia yelling about her hole. Plus, Sting taking a bump tonight was something I did not expect. Dry Chicken, I have completely lost it when Kenny Omega dropped a huge bombshell announcement tonight. Alex Jimenez, been a bigger fan of NXT lately. Great Dusty Cup segment tonight. What are some of your favorite promo packages in wrestling? Oh, gosh. I've had, over the years, I mean, there's been a whole bunch of them. I mean, One of the great ones is obviously the My Way video package for Austin and Rock going into WrestleMania 17. I am a huge fan of the build-up package to the second Shawn Michaels Undertaker WrestleMania match with the Placebo. Thought that one was great. There's so many of them. There's so many more. I'm not even remembering right now. You know, even some of those pay-per-view matches in WWE in the mid-90s when they had the voiceover guy with that dramatic, like, stock music in the background. It's been a whole bunch of them. Those are a couple of the ones that stand out to me, though. Again, look, this was from earlier. Take a look at this. In the span of what? What is that? In the span of 2 minutes, in the span of 120 seconds, we had Professor John Gotti dropping $400 in Super Chat, and Jared M. says, the professor, what he can do, I can do better. And he dropped 205 before the professor dropped his second bomb. You guys are out of your mind, but I love it. I love it. It's not even Valentine's Day anymore. I was getting some love on Valentine's and saying, oh, wait a minute. I got my Valentine here. This is just for the sake of showing their support for the stream and for the channel. Hopefully you guys will be part of our member tiers. Once I get the member tiers up in the next few weeks here on YouTube, that's in the works too. I got some plans. You're going to want to stick around for that. Magician Sapphire, that powerbomb spot with Sting. Good God Almighty. Brian Gates, what's up, Solomonster? Stay safe and get cracking. What's going on, Brian? Dry chicken without flavor. Sting taking a powerbomb from Brian Cage just blows up the cinematic match idea. Also, I am now a Maki Ito fan. Sign that woman to AEW immediately. Jacob Barnes, keep up the good work, Solomonster. Just wanted to say hi and show support. Thank you, Jacob. Thank you for joining here tonight. Ken terminated by DQ. You asked earlier about what does playing basketball have to do with the upcoming match. At least Mr. Perfect shooting hoops is focused on his gimmick. That's true. That is true. Well, I guess basketball is Shaq's gimmick, right? It's his career. But I just don't see the tie-in with this match. It would be, so, to use that example, it would be like Mr. Perfect getting ready for his big match at the King of the Ring in 93 with Bret Hart. Now, granted, he didn't know he was facing Bret Hart until he won his first match that night, but just roll with it. It would be like him preparing for the match with Bret by showing us vignettes on TV of him playing all of these other sports. Now, that made sense when they were building up the character, but if he was in deep training for the match, you would see Mr. Perfect just flipping dudes out, you know, over the top rope in the ring and hitting, you know, perfect drop kicks and perfect suplexes. You wouldn't see Mr. Perfect playing fucking tiddlywinks. You wouldn't see him playing with a slinky. Stupid. It's very stupid. Isaiah Webb. X is salty over our breakup. Called me a little boy for liking wrestling. Asked for a ride because it's raining and she missed her bus. Told her, if she's not down, I've got two words for you. Too bad. Well, good for you, Isaiah. That is awesome. That is a great story. And probably, because I know it is for me just reading that, very satisfying. One and only. Do you think we'll ever get Jericho Omega 3? And if so, when would be the right time? I feel like challenging Omega on this current run would be dumb. I don't see any need for it. Why would they have a third match? Not needed. Unless Jericho gets kicked out of the Inner Circle and goes babyface, and then at some point in the future he could just be somebody for Omega to beat, you know, but before he ultimately loses the title to somebody else, I see absolutely no reason to do that match again. It's been done in New Japan, and then they did it in AEW. There is no need to go back to that again. Unless, again, the dynamic is totally different, where this time Omega's the heel and Jericho's the babyface. Chris Quillman with the $20 super chat. I think Proud and Powerful should have won the belts tonight. Could have made for a more interesting Revolution card, as Good Brothers could have put the belts up against the Bucks and retained, and Proud and Powerful could have fought Jericho and MJF. Well, that's what I was saying earlier. That's why I really thought that there was a chance that we could get a title change on the show tonight, because the Good Brothers were there. Yeah, they could have cost the Bucks the match instead of coming out after the fact. And you have the Inner Circle strife. That whole storyline is still going. Storyline-wise, it actually would have made sense. You could have easily worked the story that way. Dry Chicken, snow in Texas, snow in North Carolina. More snow coming to the Northeast. It's about to be like the Day After Tomorrow movie. Domination Warrior, what is AEW's best venue? The Jericho Cruise or Daly's Place? You know, I'm almost sick of Daly's Place just because they're there all the time. But Daly's Place is a very nice venue. I was on the Jericho Cruise last year. I mean, I just got that cruise in before everything just went to hell. And so I watched the matches on the ship. It is a really cool atmosphere, but the one thing is the wind. The wind on top of that ship sucks. It really does. And it gets very cold because the wind is coming right off the water. You would think like you're in the middle of the Bahamas or something. So I just thought that the wind and the loud noise from the wind and you know, how much colder it made it, that wasn't so fun. And I don't know how that would translate on TV for all the noise from the wind coming in like that. So honestly, Daly's Place is a very cool little intimate venue for a wrestling show. So of the two, I'd probably go with Daly's Place. Let's see. Food Hive. In Dallas with no heat, water, or power, gas is getting scarce, and most of the stores are closed. Texas wants to save energy by having us freeze to death. Yeah, it's awful. I mean, I was watching those stories earlier. And all the infighting and everything, and the arguing and blaming. How about you help people first before you actually start passing blame? Maybe I'll run for office. I'll move to Texas. I'll run for office. Food Hive, I'm going to help you out. I'm going to work for the people. B. Vincent, 86, asked Shawn Michaels' wife if she trusts Jericho. That's a great point. That is a great point. I forgot about that. Yes, that's right. Jericho did bust her lip that one time. Michaels was not happy about that. Well, I guess you wouldn't be either if he had punched your wife in the mouth. Brandon Mobley, we're snowed in Texas, so my days are off. What did you think of Velocity? It was during my peak fandom, and there were some great matches. I would watch it occasionally, but I didn't really spend too much time, honestly, watching the show. So it just wasn't part of my regular rotation of viewing. If I thought there was a cool match that was airing, I would catch it. But I didn't really watch it enough to pass an opinion one way or the other. I'm sure the in-ring work was great. It's probably better than Heat. Dry Chicken, I'm predicting Kenny Omega against Jon Moxley. Main event rematch of Revolution will break the internet. Revolution against NBA All-Star Week on March 7th. Oklahoma Sooner sent a $2 super chat. Thank you, Oklahoma Sooner. A. Lavelle, what's up, Solo Monster? Hope you're doing well. Be safe and be healthy. You too. I hope you and everybody is doing very, very well. And finally, I think we're all caught up now. Kevin, oh my God, been a while since I joined live. Hope all is well. Well, all is going great now that we've heard from Kevin. So thank you to him. And if you're just joining, we'll go back here and just check the polls real quick. AEW Dynamite, 79, roughly 79% thumbs up. 21% thumbs down. So, at SoloMonster is the Twitter handle, guys. If you want to vote, that's the place to go. There's the NXT poll. One thing I did hear about the NXT show And this is kind of disappointing. I guess it's a bit of a spoiler. It's not really a spoiler, I guess, but there was supposed to be a match on the show tonight. It was supposed to be Karrion Kross against Santos Escobar, and I saw the match got pulled. And I don't know why it got pulled. I don't know if it was pulled for storyline reasons. I don't know if it was pulled for injury or other reasons. I have not watched NXT yet. But I was kind of looking forward to that match. So that sucks. That was very disappointing to hear that. And I hope that we are maybe going to get the match next week. Maybe they just bumped it a week for some reason. I don't know. So I'm kind of curious to go back and see what that's all about. It's just an interesting clash of styles. You don't usually expect to see someone like Karrion Kross in there with, you know, somebody who is really considered a cruiserweight. I mean, the guy's the cruiserweight champion. It's such an odd, and again, both heels. So I was kind of intrigued by the matchup. And again, I don't believe that it happened tonight, so I'll have to try to figure out exactly why that is. Ems Sanchez in the chat says, Solid Monster for Governor. 2024 governor of Texas. Governor of New York. I don't know that I want that job. Although I'd like to think I could probably do a better job than some of these people. Have you ever done polls on Facebook? I never cared for Twitter. No, we usually just do Twitter. It's more generally more active that way. So we try to stick to Twitter for the polls. Also easier, by the way, to plug them in so people can see them here on screen. I don't know that I would be able to do that as effectively with Facebook. Dry Chicken, thank you, brother. Thank you for joining. I will see you, maybe this weekend. We're going to be live on YouTube Sunday night for the Elimination Chamber stream immediately after the pay-per-view. I might go live before then to do predictions. I was originally thinking tomorrow night. We're getting a big snowstorm here in New York. I did lose power once during one of the snowstorms a few weeks ago. So that could be a little dicey. And also, I got to tell you, this card for the Elimination Chamber right now is very thin. We've got the two chamber matches. We know that Roman will then defend the title against whoever wins the SmackDown Chamber match. And we have a triple threat, right, for the U.S. title. And I believe that's it. Now, after SmackDown on Friday, we're probably going to get another one or two matches added. So I might wait maybe until after SmackDown and see, because the Raw Women's title match is not happening because Lacey Evans is pregnant. So it's a very thin card. I don't know if I can get a whole stream out of it. We'll have to see. Sir Is Manson, thank you for the super chat. Do you think Dexter Lumis can become a megastar? Also, can he use drawings as part of his promos without speaking? Well, he's been doing that. I mean, in fact, they had him host New Year's Evil beginning of January. He didn't say a word. And he was announcing matches through his drawings. He is a very talented artist. Those are his drawings. He's just got a gift. Some people just have a gift. Jerry Lawler and Bret Hart are both very gifted artists. Jerry Lawler, in particular, is an incredible artist. If you've seen any of his artwork is what really got him noticed. It's what got him into the wrestling business. I think it was it Lance Russell, I think, who took notice of his illustrations. He would do illustrations and send them in. And I think they may have started using him even to draw pictures to advertise some of the shows down in Memphis. So Dexter Lumis is one of those wrestlers who has that gift. But anyway, once we get an update, I'm sure we'll have more to talk about on that when it comes to the show on Sunday. That'll be episode 692 of the podcast coming up on Sunday. And like I was saying before, Elimination Chamber coverage right here, possibly predictions between now and then. But if not, you'll have predictions on the Sunday show. And then Sunday night, come on back and join me live. As soon as the pay-per-view goes off the air, I hope you guys will join me for your Elimination Chamber coverage. No calls tonight, Chris. I'm going to get out of here because I unfortunately did not get... I got 2.5 hours of sleep. So I'm kind of surprised I made it through the entire stream without passing out in front of you guys. Been having a lot of noises in the roof there's something in the roof. In fact, there's multiple things in the roof. I don't know if it's squirrels again. I don't know if it's mice, because we have mice all of a sudden. They're so loud. And, I mean, you can hear the scratching or the clawing or whatever the hell it is. And I'm just so petrified about the electrical wiring. I'm going to just wake up engulfed in flames or something. But nothing we can do. If they're in the ceiling, what are you going to do? It's not like I own the house, so I'm kind of fucked. But it keeps me up all night. It is the freakiest thing to be laying in bed trying to fall asleep and you hear the noise right above where you sleep. And it sounds like they're just trying to claw their way in and get to you. And it's just the most unnerving thing in the world. So, yeah, didn't get much sleep, unfortunately, last night. But I hope you guys have a great night. I will see you back here again real soon. Until then, be well, stay safe. Thank you again for all the Super Chat love. Nothing worse than dried chicken. Also, dropped a Super Chat about a minute ago. Take care, guys.